From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Teachers held walkouts this year in at least six states: West Virginia, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Arizona, Colorado, and North Carolina. The reason often cited in news headlines is salary. But take a deeper dive and you hear concerns about pension funds, funding for K through 12 curriculum, and intangibles, like a lack of respect for the profession. In the Cape Fear region, New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender counties all closed their public schools on Wednesday, May 16th, as did 39 other school districts in the state. Close to 19,000 people descended on Raleigh to participate in what was dubbed a March for Students and Rally for Respect. North Carolina is a right-to-work state, and there is no official union, but the North Carolina Association of Educators, or NCAE, is the closest relative as an advocacy group for public school employees. NCAE sponsored the May 16th rally and is pushing for increased per-pupil spending and bringing North Carolina teacher salaries up to par with the national average. Today, we'll take a closer look at life as a teacher in North Carolina with Marcia Carr, who has worked in the educational system in West Virginia, Maryland, and North Carolina. She has served as a teacher, a principal, and she was a first female school superintendent in one school district in West Virginia. She is currently an associate professor and chair of the Department of Educational Leadership at the Watson College of Education at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Marcia Carr, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
So glad to have you here. And we're inviting you to join the conversation. Do you work as a teacher in the public school system? Are you concerned about your future in the teaching profession? Would you advise your kids to go into the profession? Tell us why or why not. What do you think needs to change? You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Marcia Carr, at least 42 school districts in North Carolina shut down on May 16th because of this walkout, the number of teachers participating. All three local counties, New Hanover, Brunswick, Pender counties included. Why? What do local teachers want? Is this really all about salary?
No, it definitely is not about salary. And I think that if we think about in the past when people have erupted or been upset about things, a lot of times it looks like it's about salary, but it comes back to respect. And I think that when you take a group of professionals like teachers and you keep pushing them back into the corner and pushing them and pushing, at some point they have to come out and they have to make a statement. And I think that unfortunately, sometimes the only way to get attention is when you do make it about salary. But this truly, to me, is absolutely about respect. It's respect for teachers, the profession, and everything that they do.
So you're saying then that this lack of respect, this perceived lack of respect, shows up in different ways. Salary might be one of those ways that's tangible and something that teachers can ask for. What are some of the other ways that you think a lack of respect for the profession is expressed?
Well, I think that there are many varieties or many variables, I think, if we look at the teaching profession. It could be pupil class size, it could be materials, supplies, it can be how teachers are perceived in the public. I think back to my own teaching days, and it used to be very frustrating to me when a politician is running and the platform is always on education, and in order for them to run on that platform, they always advocate that education is broken, which implies to me that I'm not doing something right as a teacher, that I've done something wrong, that I'm not serving in the capacity I should. And when you make people feel like that, whether it's politicians, whether it's governmental agencies, whether it's the public at large, that is crushing. If you are someone that's in there working very, very hard and giving and serving students, to be made to feel like that.
So part of it is just public discourse. Do you think that there has been a dropping off of respect for the teaching profession in general?
Oh, absolutely.
And how does that show up?
Well, it shows up in a variety of ways. I think that part of that can be, if you take North Carolina, and I'm going to flash back about 15 years ago when I was a superintendent. When I was operating as a superintendent and I was recruiting, trying to get teachers into my school district, one of the problems that I ran into is that North Carolina was one of the greatest states that you could work in. And I lost teachers repeatedly to
North Carolina. You're talking about being a superintendent in West Virginia.
Yes.
So North Carolina was the bane of your existence at that point.
Absolutely, which is ironic that I ended up here. So I would look at what North Carolina was doing to see if I could emulate that or if there was some possibility in the state of being able to recruit teachers back. North Carolina was probably one of the most respected states when it came to teachers. We hired individuals, teachers from North Carolina, to come up and actually do workshops for us in the state of West Virginia. That's how well respected the state was.
What were some of the things that they taught in those workshops?
They would talk to us about, we brought people up to talk about assessment and a lot of the different strategies and things that were going on in school districts and just a lot of different professional development and workshops of that nature.
We've heard from, getting just back to the salary issue, because that is one of the tangible nuggets that we can take apart here. And we at WHQR have actually heard from more than one teacher angry over our reporting on the North Carolina budget that just passed. One person said, please explain the $50,000 calculation, talking about the numbers now saying that the average teacher salary, and this is what upsets people, I think, in the profession. The average teacher salary is now about $51,000. But if you really take that apart, you see something else. And I've heard people say, who's making $50,000?
Well, and I think that's true. I think you can go into any organization and you can take all of the salaries, and there's always going to be three or four salaries that skew it to the point that when you do that average, that it's going to look higher than what it is. You could do that at the university. You can do that at probably any organization. So I think that I absolutely agree with them that I don't think you can look at that average salary for teachers. I think I would propose that you look at average salary for first-year teachers, average salary for second-year teachers, and look at it in a more systemic way so you can see what those salary ranges are. And then I think you'll see that difference.
And when you do look at the salary schedule that is published, it appears to be, it would take a teacher with a master's degree 15 years of teaching before they reach that $50,000 salary mark. The newest budget that just passed moves that up to, by 11 years of teaching, if you have a master's degree, you would reach that $50,000 mark. And yet, there is not that pay incentive for a master's degree in the state. That was something that was taken away a few years ago. And as I understand it, that has not come back. Is that the case?
To my understanding, no, it has not. There has been, I know, a lot of dialogue, multiple conversations about trying to get it back. But at this point, I think it's moot. I just don't think it's on the table. But I hope that in the future, in some capacity, that that will go back on the table and there can be conversations about that.
We received a statement about this from New Hanover County Public Schools. They write, according to our Human Resources Division, the master's pay schedule is for those teachers who are grandfathered in. If someone received their master's degree after July 2014, they would not be eligible. And there has been no change. How important is a master's degree to a teacher in a K through 12 setting?
Well, I think there's two aspects of that. First of all, that teacher having that advanced coursework and degree is going to be more knowledgeable. So that's going to become very, very important to the school district as well as classroom instruction. But the second aspect of that is that it does somewhat become morale, because if you think about it, in most organizations, there is a mechanism or a process where there's a performance evaluation and you can receive additional money because you perform great. And the master's degree, was one of the few opportunities that teachers have in order to demonstrate I've gone above and beyond, I have a master's degree now, and they got a bonus for doing that. So if you think in terms of business, we have just removed that incentive packet, that performance packet, in order to reward them for going above and beyond. It's now gone. So if they want to get a master's, they're doing it on their own. They have to pay for it out of their pocket, and the school district is not in a position to be able to recognize it in any manner.
So then what is, if you have somebody who's going into the teaching profession, what is a long-term, a responsible long-term career path for them? Do they eventually have to get out of teaching and go into administration, or what's the way to higher pay?
Well, I think, unfortunately, I look at myself. I started out as a teacher, and I never, ever intended to be a superintendent. I would have laughed my first couple of years in teaching if you would have said that, oh, you're going to be a superintendent.
Why?
It just wasn't a career aspiration. I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to be in the classroom. The last thing I wanted to do was move out of that classroom. And I think over time, there's no other opportunity to really advance or to increase your salary unless you move into administration. So, and at some point, I think that for me, it did become probably more of a natural process. I don't know that I was necessarily motivated by income, but that income certainly helped. And it definitely rewarded me. And so at some point, it just, the next thing I know, I was a superintendent and in a whole different very far removed from classrooms at that point. I was no longer teaching students.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. It's an examination of teacher dissatisfaction in North Carolina and in the Cape Fear region. Marcia Carr, chair of the Educational Leadership Department in UNCW's Watson College, is with us today answering your questions. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some listeners. If you have ideas about what teachers need, give us a call on this Wednesday, 910-343-1138, or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today we're taking a closer look at the teaching profession in North Carolina and in the Cape Fear region with Marcia Carr, Associate Professor and Department Chair of Educational Leadership at the Watson College of Education at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. And we want to hear from you on this Wednesday. How do you think policymakers could sweeten the pot for teachers? Is this malaise all about salary, or are there deeper, more systemic issues? Call us on this Wednesday and tell us about it at 910-343-1138. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org. And if you'd like to be anonymous, just make sure you put anonymous at the top of your email. Marcia Carr, just before we went to break, you were talking about your own career trajectory when I asked you about what a good career path would be for someone in that profession, an educator who does want to eventually make good money. I don't know how else to characterize that. And you said when you started out, you never imagined not being in the classroom. You always wanted to be a teacher. Tell us why.
Well, I think that those of us that go into the teaching profession, like I honestly knew I was going to be a teacher in fifth grade.
Why?
Documented it. Well, the reason I wanted to be a teacher in fifth grade was because I wanted a desk. And that was my reason. I thought, I want a desk so bad. I was so jealous of the teacher, and all I had was my little wooden desk, and she had this big desk with drawers in it. And I said, I want to be a teacher. I want my own desk. And then that was always a joke among my family, was that I was only becoming a teacher because I could get a desk, and that there were other professions that had desks. And so at some point, it was no longer about the desk. Yeah. And it was about I wanted to have that impact on other students. I wanted to be in that classroom and touch lives. I mean, there's no greater satisfaction on this earth than being in there and having students come up. And I was more of a high school, junior high. I loved middle school students. But to have them come up and say, thank you for doing this. Thank you for changing my life. I have students to this day that are still in touch with me from when I first started teaching.
We heard from Jim in Chapel Hill. He says, I was an occupational therapist in the system for 20 years. I left in November for the private sector. Jim says, I would like people like occupational therapists and speech therapists to be included in this larger picture. In over 20 years, he says, I never received a raise. Marcia Carr, does that surprise you? Does it sound plausible? Are a lot of other public school employees overlooked?
Oh, absolutely. You look at bus drivers, look at the support staff, custodial, cafeteria workers. I mean, that's just support staff. But you also, with your call-in or your write-in, and they were talking about speech therapy, occupational therapy, the list goes on and on as far as individuals that make that school system function. School psychologists, speech and language, there's a host of support staff that I don't necessarily think it's neglected, but it's in that same category as teachers. And sometimes when we say teachers, we encompass all of that, but there's many, many layers to this onion.
We're talking about teachers in North Carolina and in the Cape Fear region. Why are so many dissatisfied? Is it all about pay, or is salary just one expression of a larger issue? With us on this Wednesday, Marcia Carr. She is chair of the Educational Leadership Department at UNCW's Watson College of Education, where she's also an associate professor. Tell us what you think about the teaching profession and what would create more teacher satisfaction. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Tiffany writes, I'm a graduate of UNCW Watson School of Education, elementary department, and Marcia Carr is doing a happy dance. Tiffany writes, I left the profession and returned to obtain a master's in clinical social work. While working in the New Hanover County school system, I dealt with anxiety due to the many burdens of our numerous roles and expectations, exhaustion due to being overworked and undervalued, depression due to being away from my very young son and family until late in the evening and at least one day of the weekend, and vicarious trauma due to working in Title I schools, which are inundated with children who live in traumatic conditions on a daily basis and who present with behaviors that are mistakenly labeled and diagnosed, medicated, and then placed into exceptional children's services due to their inability to succeed in the general classroom. The working conditions, writes Tiffany, are not sustainable. And I know personally so many teachers who are enormously talented, who either already have left or are leaving due to the lack of respect of our educators and lack of support for students. That is a lot to unpack, but it's something that I've heard before here, anecdotally. This idea that teachers are expected to deal with so many deep problems that may be on the scope of the curriculum they were expected to teach. Marcia Carr, can you comment on that?
I think that over the years, every time there was a necessity to deal with something that was going on in society, it just gets dropped into the school system. And there was never, we used to laugh and call them unfunded mandates, because we were constantly mandated to offer this or do this. And it's not that any of these mandates are bad, but they're unfunded. And so in order, as a superintendent, in order to take care of a new mandate, you have to take money from something else. So everything that she's saying is absolutely correct. I can't speak to the school district, and I certainly wouldn't, but I think that there's trace evidence of what she's talking about that you could find in every school district in the nation. And it just continues to happen. It's every time, let me give you an example, with Healthy Schools, when they decided that, and this was a different initiative that normally comes from some political entity all the way up to the governor's office and all the way up to the president. And they decided that we were going to have a Healthy Schools Act. At no point was, as a superintendent, was I contacted or asked what I thought about it. It was just suddenly I had this mandate, and I was responsible for every student in the school district now had to have a healthy choice. And they had to, we had to have a policy that told them what they could eat. We took soda machines out, which was fine. We started looking at school lunches. But the policy was not sustainable. It just wasn't anything that could really be embraced. It was too severe. And I even participated. I talked my board of education members into, listen, if we're going to approve this policy, it comes with no funding. But the least we can do is, can we live by this policy? We're asking students to eat healthy, make these healthy choices, and we're going to put this policy into place in our district. Can you, as a board member, live by this? And I did. I actually abided by this policy. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. I had to give up caffeine. I couldn't have sodas anymore.
So you personally are living by this?
I did and still do to some degree. It was such a horrible experience to go through the withdrawals of caffeine and sodas and everything else that I was putting in my body that I swore I would never go back to that. And I have not, I don't drink coffee anymore. Unless it's decaf or something, but and that's a humorous example,
sure.
And I certainly don't want to bring humor into this because I think it's a very serious topic.
But help us understand, though, why that mandate, for instance, would translate into other than having a policy that might feel very restrictive, and taking out soda machines. How does that translate into extra work or extra costs for a school?
Well, if you look at healthy food, it is much more expensive than what high-carb nutrients, or I shouldn't call them nutrients, high-carb meals. So we literally had to revamp what our school program, our school nutrition program looked like. We brought in salad bars. We added different components. And these were all good things. But this was not a funded mandate. So in order to add salad bars, to change, I think we even had to hire a couple extra people to run the salad bars and set things up. And in order to set all that up, you have to take money from something else to make that happen.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about teachers and the teaching profession in North Carolina and in the Cape Fear region. Why are so many dissatisfied? Is this issue about salary, or is that just an expression of a systemic issue? With us on this Wednesday, Marcia Carr. She's chair of the Educational Leadership Department at UNCW's Watson College of Education, where she's also an associate professor. And we want to hear what you think today about the teaching profession. What might create more teacher satisfaction? Call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. We had a call. Scott from Wilmington says, talking about salaries, politicians should use the median salaries, not the mean. This would help to show the real salaries of teachers. And going back to that salary note, according to the Raleigh News and Observer, North Carolina is climbing in the national rankings on average teacher pay. But a new report puts the state 37th in the U.S., and $9,600 below the national average. According to the NEA report, the average teacher salary in North Carolina has risen 5% since 2009, but when adjusted for inflation, the amount has dropped 9.5%. So when adjusting for inflation, teachers are actually making almost 10% less than they were about a decade ago.
Yes, absolutely.
We had a call from Beth from Wilmington. She says, I'm a retired New Hanover County school teacher. North Carolina was progressive in helping teachers get their national board certifications, which I got. She says, my daughter has her master's. She was not compensated for this. I would suggest teachers here, if they want a raise, to pursue national boards. And for those folks who aren't tuned in to that, what does that mean for a teacher to pursue?
Well, national board certification is pretty much what it says. It is a national recognition. It is extensive. I've not been through it myself. I was actually leaving and moving into administration. It was no longer offered. Obviously, school administrators don't fall under that category. So I didn't go through the process, but I have colleagues and friends that have gone through the process. And it's quite extensive, which is great. because they do have to earn it. They have to do a lot to get through it. But they're actually videotaping portions of their classrooms, and it goes on for about a year where they're collecting all kinds of data in order to present that to a board that's going to decide if they have that expertise as a teacher. And there are not a lot that make it through. I know many teachers that have tried to get national board certification that have not been able to sustain that.
I want to go back to something that Tiffany included in her email explanation about why she left the traditional public school system and is going back and got a master's in clinical social work. She talks about the working conditions there, and she talks about having to work until late in the evening and at least one day of the weekend. There is this public perception out there that teachers have it pretty easy because they work part of the day and then they get the whole summer off. And so their salary, and you are looking at me with, I wish people could see this expression as you shake your head, like, oh, honey, so sad, you really don't know. So tell us, we don't know. Tell us why teachers are working late into the evening and on weekends, and why having the summer off isn't really compensation for all of this.
I think the easiest way, perhaps, to explain it is that when a teacher arrives at their workday and starts their day, there are probably 4 to 5 hours of work that went into preparation to arrive there. They can't just arrive and then suddenly decide what they're going to do in the classroom. That preparatory work has to be done weeks in advance, if not days. And there's not time built in or any structure that provides for teachers to do that. So they naturally then have to do that in the evenings. They have to do it on weekends. They have to find some other avenue to seek that time to make this happen. And so they get through that day, and they've put all this preparatory time in to arriving. And then when they leave, all of the work that came in from students, all of the snapshots, the walkthroughs, everything that went on that day is now data that they have to interpret and they have to look at. So that's another 5 to 6 hours that gets added in that. So I think that there is a general perception that teachers just walk into the classroom and start teaching and they walk away at the end of the day and they're done. And it just doesn't work like that. I'm surprised that a teacher is only working one day out of the weekend, because I know teachers that are working all weekend long. They are tag teaming, taking their child to do something, coming back, spending 2 or 3 hours doing some work, fix dinner, come back. They're up late at night. It's an ongoing process.
One anonymous teacher wrote to us with these thoughts. She says, it is devastating to see good teachers leave teaching because they cannot afford the profession they love. It is devastating, she writes, to see students interested in teaching do something else because teachers are not adequately compensated for their work. The smaller the class size, the better. Teachers' assistants are necessary at the high school level, too. She writes, I have $120 to pay for supplies. I still buy over $250 in supplies every year. Teachers have the important clientele. When we talk about people leaving the profession, and we've already heard from a few people just this hour who say that they've done that. They went into it, they tried it, and for many different reasons left. What are you seeing, Marcia Carr, in terms of the next generation coming into the teaching profession at the Watson College of Education? What are the numbers like?
Well, I think as far as Watson, again, I'm working in educational leadership, so I'm primarily working with individuals that want to be principals and superintendents. But as far as the teacher side of Watson College, there is not necessarily a decline, but the numbers are just not sustaining. And when we recruit and talk to potential candidates, would you like to go into teaching? You know, teaching is a great career option. we hear the same things. Well, you know, I want to have a family someday, and I'm just hearing that I can't support my family on this, or I just am not sure this is a good profession to go into. I hear all these negative things. And even when they talk to other teachers that are in the profession, it's hard for them to advocate for something. I know teachers who do not advocate for their own children to go into the teaching profession. They highly recommend for them to go into something else because they don't want to see them enter in and go through what they're going through.
We had a call from Steve of Wilmington. He says if we incentivized more, then we'd get more. Ask the guest what she thinks would be fair compensation. Also, Steve says, my wife was a public school teacher, and after 30 years, she maxed out at $46,000. And we're talking about before taxes. Correct. So what would fair compensation be? You also talked about these unfunded mandates and how those come down the pike unexpectedly and school districts are expected to deal with them. So where do these, how could policymakers do a better job of funding teacher salaries? What should they be?
Well, I think that's hard. I don't even know that I can answer that because I think that there's so many aspects when you look to that salary. And I love the idea when he's talking about, I think he suggested that we look at incentivizing this in some way and creating those incentives. So I think it's a much grander issue, like salaries being one aspect of it. So you have a beginning salary, and we establish what that beginning salary needs to look like. And then we decide that if we know that research says in about 3 years after that teacher begins, if they're not happy, they're going to start looking for something else. So then at year three, it would be really easy to set up some incentive that would keep teachers at that point and not want them to go. The other aspect of this is that I think I go back to the comment earlier when I said that I never, ever saw myself leaving a classroom. But at some point, I knew that I was going to have to, and I chose to go into administration. There are teachers that never want to be an administrator, and we give them no option if they want to make additional money. So creating then some ways that if they don't want to go into administration, that they have other opportunities that could be performance-based.
A career path. Okay, and I'm going
yes.
to ask you to unpack more of that when we come back. You're listening to Coastline. It's a look at the teaching profession in the Cape Fear region and why there seems to be a growing malaise among educators in the K-12 arena. UNCW's Marcia Carr of the Watson College of Education is with us answering your questions. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Hey there, you're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, it's an exploration of the teaching profession in North Carolina and in the Cape Fear region. May 16th, New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender County schools closed because so many teachers went to Raleigh to protest in what was dubbed a March for Students and a Rally for Respect. Marcia Carr, Department Chair of Educational Leadership in UNCW's Watson College of Education. She's also an associate professor. She is with us today to help us unpack why public education seems to be in such turmoil today, at least from a public school employee point of view. And we want to hear from you on this Wednesday. What would make a difference for a teacher that you know? You can reach us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. If you'd like to be anonymous, just tell us that, and in your emails, put anonymous at the top of the email, as one listener just did, and I will get to that in a moment. It's the last segment, so just a few minutes to get your question in. Marcia Carr, just before we went to break, one of the ideas you put forth was creating a better career track for teachers so that teachers wouldn't necessarily have to move from being a teacher to an administrator to make more money. Can you talk about what that might actually look like?
Yeah. I have ideas. I don't know how solid they are, but nobody else has come up with anything better. So I definitely think it needs to be on the table and there needs to be conversations. But the Milken Family Foundation is a national educator support group, and they give out awards. And one of the things that they propose, and this has been a decade ago, is that they identified that problem that the only career path that teachers had was to go into administration like I did, and that there needed to be some way of tiering within that profession where teachers never had to leave the classroom. And to a certain degree right now, I think there's been some effort to move in that direction because we've come up with the idea of adding instructional coaches, literacy coach, math coaches, different components like that. But there's really not any additional pay associated with those. So there's almost a platform to do it. There's an avenue that it could be created, but it does require money. There has to be that pay incentive, and that would give, I think it would give teachers an opportunity to explore the idea of having some leadership roles without leaving the classroom.
Who should cough up the money for that? Is that something the state government should be doing? Is it something, should counties be working towards bumping up what they contribute towards public education? Who's at fault here?
I don't want to think of it as that people are at fault. I want to think of it as that people can be solutions. And I think that everybody has to have a hand in this. It has to start with the county government, then it has to go to the state, it has to go federal. There's a lot of different entities. And I think it's everybody has to just decide, we're going to change the face of education, and we're going to do this. We're all going to come together, and we're going to make this happen. And this is what it's going to look like. And it's just that simple. It's just we never bring all the entities together. It's fragmented. The federal government decides, we're going to issue, here's the funding source, but you must do this. We're going to give you Title I funds or Chapter I funds, they've been called. They change from time to time. But we're going to give these funds to you, but this is the only way these funds can be used. So there's still that control that's aligned with any funds that do come in at this point, especially from the federal government, a lot of times from the state.
There is a bill that was filed in the General Assembly sponsored by Republican Representative Larry Pittman from Cabarrus County that would allow teachers to arm themselves, and specifically teachers with concealed weapons permits and 16 hours of active shooter training. They could take handguns to school if their local school boards would allow it, according to this bill. Now, the practical reality is the bill's gone to the Rules Committee, which is where bills go to die. And the majority of the GOP seems to be focused on other issues like building safety and funding more mental health professionals and SROs and that sort of thing. But this idea comes up consistently since that February school shooting, particularly. Certainly, you can't speak for all teachers, but you have a strong opinion and you have some interesting personal circumstances. So tell us what you think about teachers armed in schools.
I absolutely do not believe we should be arming teachers in schools. First of all, the majority, if not all, of teachers that went into the profession, that was never, ever on that list. I'm going to become a teacher and I'm going to carry a gun. So it's ludicrous. Because that's, if you go back to the definition of teaching, it has nothing to do with that. That they should be able to walk into a school system and know that they're going to be safe, and the students know they're going to be safe. That's not a responsibility of the teacher, and they shouldn't be carrying weapons. I don't think they want to carry weapons. I actually was raised in West Virginia, and I was shooting a gun when I was 5 or 6 years old. So I am comfortable. I have a concealed weapon permit. I've always been comfortable shooting. And I haven't shot any animals and definitely no people. But I wouldn't want to carry a gun. And I'm comfortable.
You wouldn't want to carry a gun if you were a teacher in a classroom?
I would not.
Why not?
Well, the responsibility and burden you have on that weapon. First of all, how are you going to ensure that it's not somewhere where a student can get a hold of it or where somebody else can find it? So I would already have enough pressure on me as a teacher that the last thing I want to have to worry about is having a gun on me and being able to keep. I'm not even comfortable in my own home. And I don't even have children. The guns are locked up. They're in a place where nobody can get to them. I even have security areas because I'm not going to take that chance that somebody accidentally gets a hold of it. And I don't even know that I would ever draw a gun. So I think that to think that we're going to put a weapon in the hands of teachers and have them bring guns to school, I just can't even fathom that we're having this conversation. It's ludicrous to me.
We're talking with Marcia Carr on Coastline today. She's chair of the Educational Leadership Department at UNCW's Watson College of Education. She's also an associate professor there. Tell us what you think about the teaching profession. What would create more teacher satisfaction? You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Anonymous writes, how do charter schools fit into the issues that teacher and or public schools are facing? Is there data to show that teachers are leaving to teach in charter or private schools?
I actually am not sure. I have not seen any data that supports that. I know there's a NC State just produced a document, a study that spoke to charter schools, and I haven't even had time to actually read that. So it would be presumptuous of me to even comment on that. I don't have enough data to support it one way or the other.
We've heard from school administrators that charter schools have been sort of a thorn in the side of traditional public schools in terms of taking a part of the limited pot of money that is available for public schools. Do you think that's an issue? The idea behind charter schools in this state initially was they're an experimental lab. When best practices are discovered in those settings, then they will be brought into and implemented by traditional public schools. That doesn't appear to be happening. There's not a mechanism for that. So has the state shot itself in the foot in terms of allowing these charter schools to proliferate and kind of leaving behind the traditional public schools?
Well, I think the verdict is still out on that, and I think that there'll have to be a very close scrutiny of how that all plays out. I think the original concerns, and I, from my own perspective, my original concerns, even as an administrator, was that I don't have choices. Like when a student moves into the district, they move in the middle of the year, I don't have the option of saying, no, you can't come to the school, or this school's not right for you, I'm going to put you over here. And I think that the concern was that charter schools were given flexibility and rules that nobody else had to live under, and which gave them almost they were set up to be successful. And if you took traditional schools and you give them those same rules and those same parameters, well, maybe they could be successful. So there was almost a resentment when there were first conversations about it because of the special conditions that were set up. It almost felt like traditional schools became a dumping ground. And good students were going to gravitate more into charter schools. Why would they stay in a school that has all these different rules and regulations where they could go to a school that is set up completely different and they could be more successful? So it was not viewed as anything positive. It was viewed as competition from school administrators.
We had a call from Maury from Oak Island. My 17-year-old grandson wants to be a high school math teacher and band leader. My heart breaks for him because I don't know how many music programs will be left in this state, and I want him to live a sustainable life. Maury says, plus, to teach math in secondary school, he'll have to get a master's degree, and they don't compensate for this. What would you say to Maury's grandson if you could give him advice?
Wow, this is heartbreaking because the educator side of me wants to say that, you know, the teaching profession is one of service, and there are sacrifices you will make to serve in that capacity. The realistic person inside of me says that I get everything that this man's heart is breaking for and why he's so torn in having his child go into the profession. I think he is absolutely an example of what's going on in education right now, that parents even have to consider that this may not be a good profession for their child, and that their child may not be compensated or that their child may suffer because of going into education. It's heartbreaking to me to even hear this, and I know it's true.
Jason from Carolina Beach called in and said, my sister teaches teachers who work with emotionally handicapped children at ECU. She says there seems to be a lack of people going into this area of study. Is there a way to incentivize teachers to fill this gap?
And that's true. We're seeing the same thing at UNCW as far as specialty areas like that are seeing a decrease. And I absolutely agree that it goes back to if we start mapping out a process in order to create those incentivize and create pockets of incentive that don't require you to go into administration, that's clearly one of those other areas. School counselors are burdened, and it's difficult to get school counselors because of the amount of work that they have to do, and they're not even in the classroom. They fall into a lot of the managerial things that can't be accomplished with administrators.
Will from Wilmington called in and said, my wife is a teacher. People don't understand the depression and anxiety that the job can create. Teachers need backing from the administration when they have to deal with agitated parents. I try to help her through this, but I wish people would know the stress she suffers. Do teachers get support from administrators, or is this a wrinkle that we also haven't talked about, the fact that teachers have to be essentially diplomats with parents? Is that another?
I definitely think that's another layer to it. And I do think that most school administrators truly do want to support their teachers. I think they're as exhausted and they're pulled in so many different ways that it may not feel, teachers may not feel like they're being supported. Because you got to remember, they have to go to all the events. They have ball games in the evenings. I know as superintendent, I never had a weekend off. I didn't have evenings off. There was always something that I had to attend. And I don't know that I had to, but I wanted to. You want to be there to support students. If they have a band concert, you would try to go to this high school's band concert, and you also try to go to this sports event at another high school, and you try to have that visibility. The parents have access to you. So I think that part of it is teachers do have to have some diplomatic skills to deal with irate parents, but I also know that that's changed over the years. I'm 62 years old, and so when I do a flashback over the years of when I've been in education, I can recall there was a time when if I got in trouble at school, my parents never questioned anything. I was in trouble at home. It was an automatic assumption that if I'd done something at school, I was in trouble. And that's not the case right now.
Can parents help teachers?
Oh, absolutely.
How?
Well, I think one thing is get the facts. Don't automatically assume that the school's wrong, and don't automatically assume that your child is wrong. Get facts. Find out what's actually going on. And then work with that teacher so that you can find some resolve. But I think walking into a school district or into a school building and being irate and jumping on the teacher is not going to be a solution. And you're also training your child that this is how you deal with issues, which is even worse. So I think that it's a matter of get the facts calmly and realize that the teacher may be doing the best job that they can. There may be limitations to what they can do.
Now, for teachers, would you recommend that they rally together and engage in more walkouts? How's that for a politically fraught question? But what do they need to do to get change?
Well, I don't think I was shocked by the walkout. When the West Virginia teachers walked out, of course, it's a unionized state, and I actually was in the state when they had the first and only other walkout, where there actually was a strike line, and you had to cross the picket line. So it was an actual strike, where this was a little nicer. It was called a walkout. They tried to be a little more diplomatic about it. But attention has to be called, and it's unfortunate that we've pushed teachers, we've pushed this professional group into a corner where they feel that they have no other option than to do a walkout to call attention to it, because they have no other opportunity. I mean, what is available for them to cry out and say, and they've been doing this for a long time, that our conditions are getting tougher and tougher. And I think when all the attention got on all the shootings, and suddenly they were already stressed enough, and now they have to worry about whether they're going to live or not.
That's this edition of Coastline. Marcia Carr, what a pleasure having you with us today. Thank you. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caroline DeVries is our webmaster. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast. Find it on the WHQR app or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.